Source Trunk, a weekly trunkload of open source.
Hi, and welcome to Source Trunk episode 1, recorded on September 19, 2006. This podcast will try to demystify the beautiful beast that is open source and show the listeners the more practical examples of open source and free software. I will do a description of free selected applications going from office applications, server software, to multimedia software, to finally close up with the odd one out, something that doesn't fit the three previous categories. Microsoft Windows and Mac OS X users, don't be afraid, there's a lot of software in the trunk that's ported or even developed on your operating system and is also free software. Now let's get the show on the road. I'll never be able to cram this in 30 minutes. I'll try to, but it will be difficult. The first one, the Office applications, OpenOffice. If you are a heavy Linux or BSD user, then you surely know all about OpenOffice. So don't roll your eyes. There's more to come in this podcast than just OpenOffice. Just hang in there. I'm taking OpenOffice as a first, just to demonstrate a beautiful example of a fine office suite that is completely free. Free as in modifiable, and free as in it doesn't cost you a dime. This application can compete with the Microsoft Office suite without a problem. Now, wouldn't it be nice for a change to drop your illegal copy of Microsoft Office and swap it for completely legal and free Office suite? Well, you can. It's nearly fully compatible with Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint documents, and it supports the Open Document Standard. A lot of governments are switching their gear to OpenOffice document formats. For example, I'm from Belgium, and the Belgian government departments, for example, will be instructed to use an open file format for internal communications. And that's where OpenOffice shines, because that's the format they by default use. The different applications in the suite are the following. You have Writer. Now, that's a word processor like Microsoft Word. You have Calc. That's a spreadsheet, similar to Microsoft Excel. You have Impress. That's a presentation program, similar to Microsoft PowerPoint. You have Base. That's a database program, similar to Microsoft Access. You have Draw. That's a vector graphics editor, similar to CorelDRAW, which you can even use to make flowcharts. And you have Math, a mathematical formula creator, similar to Microsoft Equation Editor. Now, for Mac OS X users, there are two versions you can choose. One is a genuine OpenOffice suite that runs under X11. X11 is the port you'll need to use a lot of Unix or Linux based programs, or you could use NeoOffice, which integrates more smoothly in the OS X operating system and has full access to the font and printing subsystem. The releases of newer versions of NeoOffice tend to take more time due to the fact that the development team is smaller compared to the team that develops OpenOffice. So Mac users, choose OpenOffice or NeoOffice. They both work very, very fine, but try them out, both of them. The offer of OpenOffice, well, it speaks for itself that there is not one offer. It's really a division. It was originally made by Star Division. They're the offer of the Star Office Suite. Afterwards, that firm was bought by Sun. Sun today is still the primary contributor of code to the project, and still is the major fundraiser for the project. Now, there are some downsides to OpenOffice. It tends to be a bit slower than Microsoft Office, but you could use the auto starter on Microsoft Windows, for example, so that the core elements get loaded at boot time. The look and feel of the program does not yet blend in completely over the host operating system. So, for example, on a Linux system, you still see you're working with a program that is not really adapted to GNOME or KDE. On Microsoft Windows, you'll see that the menus are a bit more Unix-like. On Mac OS X, you don't really have the nice looking Aqua interface unless you use NeoOffice that tries to adapt very well. Some tips if you start for the first time with OpenOffice: autosave is turned off by default, so you could be typing away a whole day without saving, and if the thing crashes, you lose the whole day of work. So either you turn on autosave or you get in the habit of saving regularly. That's one. Open document format is the default format. That means if you are saving a document, it will be saved in the open document format and not in a Microsoft Office format. When you make an open document format, be sure that the person you are sending the document supports open document. Otherwise, export it to a Microsoft Windows, Microsoft Office document, and it will be all right. Export your documents, for example, in PDF or even to Flash movies in Impress, for example, to make it easier to other people to look at your documents. Nearly everybody has a PDF reader, and that makes it very portable and also not changeable. In this way, people can't mess with your documents if you export them in PDF or not easily. OpenOffice is sometimes capable of repairing damaged Microsoft Office documents where the newer Microsoft applications hang completely. So if you have a completely corrupted Microsoft document, try to open it with OpenOffice. Chances are it can completely read it and export it back to a nice readable format. You can use the macro recorder as well to automate a lot of tasks. So all your macro scripts can be made again in OpenOffice. Availability. OpenOffice can be downloaded for Microsoft Windows systems, Unix systems with X11, for example, Linux, BSD, Solaris, macOS X systems. And oh yeah, if you're that kind of a geek, it has even been ported to OS 2. The latest release, the stable release, is 2.0.3. Where to get it? You can download it from www.openoffice.org. All the links will be in the show notes on www.sourcetrunk.com. Most of the time, OpenOffice is embedded in your Linux distribution by default. Check if it is. If it isn't, use the package managers to install it. Do not, or try not to, build the sucker from source. If you're going to build OpenOffice from source, it will take a long time to build OpenOffice. Be prepared to let your machine crunch on it for a whole day, or on slower machines, even 2 days. The license for OpenOffice is the LGPL, that's the GNU Lesser General Public License. I'm not going to go into detail in the license formats, but let's say that the LGPL is a compromise between the strong copyleft GNU General Public License and the simple permissive licenses such as the BSD licenses, for example. Okay, that's for an office, for the office applications. Every podcast I will be drinking a different Belgian beer, just because I like drinking beers while I'm talking, so why not on a podcast? And today it will be a Duvel. Some people in America pronounce it Duvel. It's Duvel. Belgian beer, Duvel. I'll put some information about it on sourcetrunk.com if you're interested. And now I'm going to take a little sip. Ah, oh, very nice. Okay. Server software. AFD is the next application I'm going to describe. That's the automatic file distributor. Now, I'm taking this description for AFD from the documentation because it is really, really good and it describes it very well. The automatic file distributor provides a framework for very flexible, non-stop, log and debuggable delivery of an arbitrary amount of files to multiple recipients. It's a mouthful. Now, let's take this from an angle of necessity. Imagine you're a system administrator who accepts files via an FTP server in a folder and has to distribute those files to, for example, another folder, more than one folder, copies for backup, for example, folders on remote servers, another FTP server, mail addresses that you want to distribute to, perform scripts on the files, and then ship them to other folders or servers. Well, then AFD is completely what you need. Give an example. We needed to find a fast, robust solution to replace a rather complicated PDF flow, and AFD did this in a matter of days. Nearly everything I needed for a pretty typical flow was there. The little things that were missing were easily filled in by scripts, executed and controlled by AFD, of course. It can even retrieve files from one FTP or HTTP server and pass it on to another server. AFD only has to be installed on the server that is actually doing the distribution, so not even on the source or the target. The concept is very, very easy. You just download the software, install it, and start it up. Then you add configuration entries in a file to denote where the files have to be picked up and where they have to go. AFD will, without stopping or errors, just do that. Move them from one spot to another. It has very, very nice features. It can send any kind of file. It doesn't have to read the contents, so that makes it usable for all sorts of workflows. You can give priority values to certain queues. In this way, when bandwidth is limited, you can have the more important files reach their destination earlier. It uses the concept of FIFO, first in, first out, and first copies the files to a temporary base from where it is sent to the target directory or server. Now, this is an important concept. In this way, if the target server or distribution server goes down while it is sending, no data is lost, and a resend is initiated as soon as all servers are back online. It has a crystal clear design. Everything is logical, and it's easy to follow the server's way of processing. The logs are very clear and have all the information you need when something goes wrong. It has a very sophisticated and compact X11 interface to monitor and control the distribution of files. If you don't like having a server doing stuff without seeing directly on your screen what is happening, well, then you can just start up the X11 interface and see what is going on. See the little meters going left and right to follow it. The author of AFD is Holger Kiel. Now, his background is he works for the Deutsche Wetterdienst, the DWD, that's the German Weather Service. And AFD is in use at over 150 installations, distributing about 9 million files for about 6 terabytes daily. And it's administrated by a single person. Availability. It's available for a lot of Unix-based operating systems, Linux, Solaris, HP UX, IRIX, AAX, macOS X, FTX, and SCO Open Server. So this one is really Unix-based, no Microsoft support. But you could experiment with Sigwindow. Sigwin is a Unix emulator on a Microsoft Windows system. But try it out in production test setup first, if you are going to do it on a Windows-based system. Now, some tips. Read the documentation. All of it. It's not that much, and it's important to understand how the server works and what the syntax of the configuration files are. Don't lose time trying out switches if you don't know precisely what they do. It's crystal clear, but you have to read the manual. Subscribe to the mailing list as well. To give you an example, I had a problem with an option which did not work as expected. You can instruct the server to wait for a difference in file modification time before it grabs it from the source, and it didn't work like I was expecting. I mailed my problem to the mailing list, got a lot of support from people who use AFD and had the same problem, and the developer himself mailed the whole group a patch. It appeared to be a little mistake in code, which had only been found out just now. Now this is where open source really shines. They create excellent software to use in production environments. They put it for download for everybody to use and to look at the code. They learn from experience from other users where they have to adapt the software, and they send a patch to everybody who wants it. So that's really what open source is all about. Distribute it to as much people, to as many people as you can, let them test it out, have feedback, and adapt the software so you can write better software. In proprietary software, you would have to wait months for something like this to be taken up in a major release. Here, a simple patch in the same week, recompile, it just did the trick. 1 week. Where to get it? You can download it from www.dwd.de/AFD. Also, the link is in the show notes. It is GPL licensed. Next on the line, multimedia software. That's where I downloaded Delineate. Delineate is a tool for converting raster images to SVG, which stands for scalable vector graphics, using autotrace or portrace. Let me give you an example. It takes a simple picture or photo and converts it to something you can use with software like, for example, Adobe Illustrator, Freehand, or CorelDRAW, or Inkscape, the latter being the open source version of the pack. If you need software to make logos based on real-life pictures, now this is for you. It is based on the AutoTrace and PotTrace software. I've put it to the test. I've taken a picture of a sunflower and processed it through Delineate with the default values. The results were astonishing. I open it up with Inkscape and every little leaf or flower leaf is vectorized and can be transformed, put somewhere else, etc. There's still some work to do in your software to clean it up, but the basics are there. My next test was a picture of a car. Now, I like to have scalable vector graphics of a car. Works perfectly. Just take a picture of a car, put it through Delineate, and you can use it in any vector graphics software you want. Leaving the default settings is fun, just to look at the results. But it's really good if you're going to experiment with the different options. Things like the color count, corner surround, line threshold, and people who know a bit about scalable vector graphics, they know what I'm talking about. Now, the best thing you can do is just take a picture, change it, change the options a bit, and let it process again, and look at the difference in the two results you got, because you can put them one beside the other, just to compare. The author of the software is Robert McKinnon. Availability: Delineate was built for Mac OS X, Microsoft Windows, and X11-based operating systems. So yes, all the BSD, Linux operating systems you can think of. Now, some tips. Do not use TIFF or other big formats with big file sizes. While the software can handle this, your computer will crunch itself to death. My computer was really running very hot when it tried to do that. Experiment a lot with different options. Or, if you like to do the things the right way, just find a book about auto-tracing, and then you'll know what you're doing. The default options are good to make a logo, but I bet you can do a lot more than just the default. You can group by color, for example, which makes it easy to use later in your vector software. Now, where to get it? You can download it from delineate.sourceforge.net. Also, links on sourcetrunk.com. The license is GPL, GNU General Public License. Okay, so we get to the odd one out. Electric Sheep. Electric Sheep is a screensaver, but it's not your ordinary screensaver. I'll try to read the description from the site, because it's very, very descriptive. Here we go. I'm first going to take a sip, because this is a very long description. Ready? Okay. Electric Sheep is a free, open-source screensaver run by thousands of people all over the world. It can be installed on any ordinary PC or Mac. When these computers sleep, the screensaver comes on and the computers communicate with each other by the internet to share the work of creating morphing abstract animations known as sheep. The result is a collective Android dream. Android Dream, some of you would know, that's an homage to Philip K. Dick's novel Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Beautiful novel. So that's the description. Now there you go. There's more. Anyone watching one of these computers may vote for their favorite animations using the keyboard. The more popular sheep live longer and reproduce according to a genetic algorithm with mutation and crossover. Hence the flock evolves to please its global audience. You can also design your own sheep and submit them to the gene pool. Now, if you have a SETI screensaver, well, that's just small to compare to this one. This is very nice. I have it installed on the Ubuntu desktop machine. Came right out of the package installer. And it works like a charm. The results are just beautiful. The author is Scott Draves. He's creator, and it is supported and programmed by a lot of people. Availability. It's there for different styles of Linux, FreeBSD, Microsoft Windows, and macOS X. If you want to, you can try to port it to your favorite distribution. The source is available for you to do so. Some tips. Check out the samples on their website, so you have an idea about the abstract animations. They are really, really, really beautiful. I can't stress it enough. Do not go too heavy on the booze when watching these animations. They're like frigging lava lamps, only they're much, much more confusing. If you want to debug the electric sheep, okay, this came out all wrong. You can debug the electric sheep. You can simply type in a terminal electric sheep --help, and then you can look for startup options, data directories, and the like. Only use this program if you have very high bandwidth, just high bandwidth, like cable or DSL. If you're a dial-up user, don't even try, because, as was mentioned, it will communicate with all the other electric sheep on the internet, and it takes a lot of bandwidth to do so. Where to get it? You can get it from electricsheep.org. The license is GPL. Okay, let's wrap it up. Nice, all four under 30 minutes. Didn't think I would make it. I hope you all liked this episode. Feel free to leave comments about the show on sourcetrunk.com. Let me know if I'm talking too slow, if I'm talking too fast, if I'm not pronouncing like it should, putting too much stress on a subject, going too fast over some aspects, etc. I would like to improve this podcast, and your feedback is the only way I will be able to do so. You don't have to log in to leave comments on the site. You can do this completely anonymous. We'll see how long I can keep that up. But if you want, you can register. Very simple, just click Create New Account on the left side. I'm just protecting myself from spam bots with a little math problem. Not too hard though, it doesn't get harder than how many is 6 plus 9, so that's not too difficult, is it? Leave comments with your username if you're registered, or even use the fora to discuss all sorts of applications or the podcast itself with other members. Don't think too much of the fora. It's just a place where you can easily discuss something and leave traces about it for all the other users. This can always prove handy for fresh open source users who haven't got a clue where to begin. The fora is just a little experiment. We'll see how that goes. Oh yeah, I have also a little chat room on the site. Also a little experiment. We'll see how that goes as well. I'm having a little cold, so cold. I'm sick, so this podcast could sound a bit nasal, but hey, I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. You can also mail me directly at sourcetrunk@gmail.com, sourcetrunk@gmail.com if you prefer. But try out the comments and fora on sourcetrunk.com. They are still fresh and clean. Go ahead and spill your beans on them. The theme song of this podcast is by Brand New Sin. You can find them on music.podshow.com. If you like them or you bought an album, let me know. I would like to hear some feedback about it. I'm leaving you with Smashed by Seduce. They have a new album. Look for them also on music.podshow.com. And I think they're even available on the iTunes Music Store. That's Seduce. Thanks for your time and good hunting.